Hopes were high after both Iran and the West proclaimed the first round of their latest talks were positive. But just ahead of the second round, threatening voices from the West have cast the shadow of doubt over dialogue that was hoped would bring the dispute over Iran's nuclear energy program to a conclusion. What is hindering an agreement? I'm Homa Lezgi, and this is News Analysis.
After a 15-month gap, the talks between Iran and representatives from the P5+1, consisting of the US, Britain, Russia, China, France and Germany, resumed in Istanbul last April. Both sides described the talks as positive and pinned their hopes on making progress in Baghdad. They spoke of a reciprocal relationship based on mutual respect and cooperation. But as the two sides are gearing up for the Baghdad talks, some Western officials are making comments that are not welcomed by Iran. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton again spoke of a combination of pressure and negotiation as Washington's approach toward Iran. EU Foreign Policy Chief Catherine Ashton said she hopes the talks would form the basis for Iran to eventually abandon what she referred to as its nuclear weapons program. And most recently, British Foreign Secretary William Hague threatened Iran with further sanctions. Analysts see such comments as a propaganda campaign to put pressure on Tehran ahead of the Baghdad talks.
I think this is basically just to prepare the ground to put pressure on Iran during the coming negotiations. But I don't think it's going to have an effect. Every time negotiations are to take place, before them you have the Associated Press or some other news agency carrying out pieces on behalf of Western governments to put pressure on Iran, and you have Western officials making harsh statements against the country.
Iran hits back at the comments with a firm response. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council warned the West that applying pressure on Tehran could jeopardize the upcoming talks. Saeed Jalili said the era of a pressure strategy against Tehran is over and that any strategic miscalculations would endanger the success of the Baghdad negotiations. Iran says its negotiations with the P5+1 aim to develop a comprehensive modality for dialogue, and the West needs to take tangible steps towards such a goal. So far, the United States and its Western allies have imposed several rounds of unilateral sanctions against Iran under the pretext that Tehran seeks military objectives through its nuclear program. Iran categorically rejects the allegations as baseless and politically motivated. Even the U.S. National Intelligence estimates from 2007 have confirmed that Tehran is not seeking nuclear weapons. Iran has already declared its opposition to weapons of mass destruction. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has issued a religious decree or fatwa forbidding the production, stockpiling, and use of nuclear weapons. As a member of the IAEA and a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, Iran considers access to nuclear technology an inalienable right. At the same time, Iran says the U.S. and its Western allies, which have huge stockpiles of nuclear arsenal, are in violation of NPT.
Joining me now live from Washington, Mr. Jeff Steinberg with the Executive Intelligence Review. I'd also like to welcome our guest in Boston, political scientist and author of several books, including Iran's Nuclear Program, Debating Facts versus Fiction, Mr. Kaveh Afrosiabi, and also with us via Skype from Irvine, Professor of the University of Irvine, Mr. Nader Bagherzadeh. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question to our guest in Washington, Mr. Jeff Steinberg. The first round of these talks, we know, Jeff, ended with positive comments from both sides, but ahead of the second round, we're hearing negative comments by the West. The U.S. and Britain, for instance, they threatened Iran with sanctions. Iran, we know, has called this unconstructive. Why did the U.S. and the U.K. resort to threats in the run-up to the Baghdad talks?
Well, I think the fair question that needs to be asked is whether or not the governments of the UK and the US in particular really do want to see the talks reach a successful conclusion. Because some of the behavior in recent days, for example, the official position announced by the representative of the European Union at the recent non-proliferation treaty conference in Vienna, seemed to be a pullback from the kind of dialogue and open attempt to reach a genuine global agreement that was present at the opening meeting in Istanbul. So my question is whether or not it's going to be the policy of the governments of the United States and the UK in particular to negotiate in good faith or to insist on capitulation on the part of Iran rather than diplomacy.
Okay, Kaveh Afrasiabi, I'd like to put this question to you as well. Would you also conclude that the fact that we're hearing these threats from these countries shows that there isn't the willingness, as our guest in Washington is suggesting there, to reach an agreement in these talks?
Well, while I agree with Jeff, I think that this is an old story. You know, we have these pre-talk maneuvers aimed at pressuring Iran to make concessions at the negotiation table, but they're not necessarily expressions of the official policy. And we saw a more conciliatory statement from U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton just today. So I'm not sure that, you know, the policymakers in Washington and other Western capitals are intent on self-torpedoing the constructive process that began in Istanbul and gave a new lease of life today by the conclusion of the constructive talks in Vienna these past 2 days. So the fact that Iran and the IAEA made substantial progress and are set to another round of talks next week is a good omen for the Baghdad talk. And I think it sets a positive tone for the Baghdad summit, and both sides need to take advantage of that.
Right, so you're optimistic, Mr. Afrasiabi. Let's get to our guest in Evine, Mr. Bagherzadeh. The thing is, the Western approach has been termed by some as a dual approach of dialogue and pressure simultaneously. If you agree that that is the approach that's been taken by the West, how do you think it's going to affect the talks?
So I think I agree with your guest that the position is to kind of have a situation with Iran whereby there are some positive results. I think everybody is kind of tired of being stuck in this hole of threats and sanctions, and at some point it has to give and provide some results. But unfortunately, at this stage, United States election is happening in November, so one has to expect that nothing major will happen in this arena. Perhaps minor issues will be taken care of, perhaps the 20% enrichment activities. So my guess is that these past 2 days, probably the results were positive, and most likely in Baghdad they will have some opportunities to express what they have achieved. The comments you mentioned are disturbing, in my opinion, I think, but this is the positioning that different diplomats do, as one of your guests mentioned, and also you see some of these news organizations come up with these sound bites to get extra circulations and provide some information that they've been holding on for weeks and months. And so all of this we've seen before. This is the same dance we saw in the past few years, right? And the results are the same. Different groups try to torpedo this, and sometimes they're successful, sometimes they're not. But at the end, I think everybody agrees that they have to get to a point to recognize Iran's position as an NPT member and move forward and make sure that there are no weapon activities going on. So all of that has to come together, and hopefully the results in Baghdad will be as positive as Istanbul or maybe even more.
Right. Well, of course, what you say disturbing about what has been said in the media, it's not, of course, just reports. Jeff Steinberg, we're hearing Hillary Clinton herself, we're hearing William Hague saying in their own words that they want concrete steps being taken from Iran. And if Iran doesn't do that, they say it's going to face sanctions. What are these concrete steps, do you think, that they're talking about?
I think they have mentioned it as far as...
If Jeff could answer this one, and I'll come back to you.
Okay, fine. Look, I think that obviously one of the big issues is the 20% enriched uranium and the activities that are going on at the facility near Qom. That's going to be one of the big demands. I think it's very important. First of all, I agree with the other two guests that we're not going to have a clear idea of what the actual intentions are of the P5+1 governments until the first really substantive talks begin in the next few days in Baghdad. And there's always harsh rhetoric and jockeying around to create the most favorable diplomatic conditions to gain concessions from the other side going into it. My point is that that's all well and good if that's what's going on here. If the intention is to throw a monkey wrench at exactly the moment that every signal that's coming from the Iranian government is that they are prepared to negotiate a fair and verifiable resolution of all of the big outstanding issues. If the U.S. and Britain in particular are going to negotiate in good faith, and I'm very optimistic that we can get a real breakthrough. And frankly, if we have a normalization of relations with Iran, meaning the sanctions are ended and we enter back into normal diplomacy, Iran can be enormously helpful in helping the United States deal with some other very big thorny right. challenges, like the withdrawal from Afghanistan and having stability. So the question is not going to be clearly answered until we see what comes out of Baghdad. I'm right. a bit skeptical about how my government and the British government are going to behave. That's just my own experience with them, following them closely, and I hope they're able to say take a yes from Tehran.
Right, Mr. Afrasiabi, we know, of course, no details about what exactly is being said in these meetings, but what we know from what officials from both sides have been saying, Iran has been saying, for instance, that it will talk on equal grounds, that it is going to talk on cooperation, but Iran has also, again, made that same demand. It wants to see concrete steps from the West. What are these steps that Iran is demanding? Will the West take them? And do you think that a compromise is possible with this situation?
Well, Iran is engaged in a two-track diplomacy, one with the 5+1, the other one with the IAEA. And the talks with the IAEA are making good, solid progress. The IAEA has demanded access to certain sites, such as the military facility at Parchin, and Iran appears to be moving in that direction. But I think it's very important to see Iran's set of demands as well, because Iran is very concerned about nuclear proliferation in the Middle East led by Israel. And wants Israel to be put under pressure by the international community to join the NPT and to give access to its nuclear facilities by the IAEA inspectors. That's one important issue. The other one is nuclear disarmament, because we see that some of these states that are engaged in nuclear talks with Iran are modernizing their nuclear arsenals. And we also hear about NATO replacing the old fleet of bombers with new generation that, you know, can drop bombs with more precision and so forth. And that poses a national security threat to countries such as Russia as well as Iran. And, you know, these are not separate issues, and there's not a China wall among these issues. And Iran has a right to express concerns about the lack of movement on disarmament and the modernization of the nuclear arsenal by these countries. In addition to that, there are the issues of regional security that right. Iran is very interested to see, you know, what's going on in Afghanistan and U.S.'s intention to build permanent bases there.
Right.
And I think the Baghdad summit provides an opportunity on the sideline, at least, to raise some of these issues.
Right. Well, Professor Bagherzadeh, Iran's leader, we know, has issued a religious fatwa against the production and use of nuclear arms. And you know fatwas are considered even more binding than any official agreement or document in Iran and in Islamic countries. The IAEA has not found concrete evidence that Iran is pursuing weapons. Even, you're aware, U.S. and Israeli intelligence agencies have confirmed Iran does not have nuclear arms. But does that show that Iran's case has been blown out of proportion, as some analysts have concluded?
Yes, I think definitely the case. What the agency and the Western powers are requesting is additional protocol for Iran in a kind of a non-contractual statement. When they want to visit all these sites, they're asking for additional protocol when it's beyond what the comprehensive safeguard agreement, the agreement between Iran and the agency is. So So I think from Iran's point of view, to build confidence, probably it's okay to do this, given the fact that there's a fatwa and there are other issues as well. I think the message came from Erdogan to the Iranian officials that the United States wants to pursue that issue of fatwa. My only concern is how far can they do this, or are they kicking the can down the street because of the what's going on in the United States in terms of elections? There are really limited options that the United States has in terms of going beyond just minor steps, as Mr. Lavrov has mentioned, perhaps reduce the 20% enrichment. But at some point, they have to get to the step that this kind of conflict reaches a peaceful means of communication and strategy that, as I think your other guest, Jeff, said, is that Iran is very valuable to the United States in terms of dealing with the regional issues, has the same language as Afghanistan, has the same religion as Iraq. So it's being really not utilizing Iran's power in that part of the world is against the global foreign policy of the United States in that very, very critical region. In terms of what is expected from the regional issues, I think the very first thing is to recognize Iran's rights under the NPT, because NPT has been signed by a member country. All the other members should follow through. It's not that I hear the word that the Western countries are going to permit Iran to do enrichment. There's no the contract is between Iran and the agency. It's not between Iran and the other Western powers. As a member of the agency, they have to honor the contract.
Right.
If they have other wishes for confidence building, that's a different story. But the word permitting is not relevant with the contract that Iran has with the agency. Otherwise, the whole NPT is up in the air.
Right. Mr. Steinberg, the U.S. and its allies are continuing to say that Iran seeks to build nuclear weapons, but repeated U.S. NIEs, or National Intelligence Estimates, since 2007 have been stressing that Iran is not seeking nuclear weapons. So what is the reason for the nuclear arsenal allegations, while it's been rejected at home and even by some Israeli intelligence officials? Why do you think we're seeing this insistence? And as a result of that insistence, U.S. sanctions, EU sanctions, what do you say about the legality of these sanctions?
Well, the other guests have quite correctly identified the fact that we're in an election year here in the United States. It's not just the presidential elections, but it's every member of the House of Representatives and about a third of the members of the Senate. And so everybody is hypersensitive to what the electoral implications will be of what they say and do. Now, as you've just correctly said, in 2007, the National Intelligence Council, in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, that is the comprehensive body of all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies. In 2010, there was an update of that National Intelligence Estimate, and several foreign governments, specifically Israel and Great Britain, had provided information claiming that Iran had resumed work on a nuclear weapon. The U.S. intelligence community studied that evidence, did further investigating, and concluded that Iran was not engaged in any kind of weaponization program. And that second NIE in 2010 is still the official policy view of the intelligence community. Politicians running for election will say and do all kinds of things if they think it will garner them 5 extra votes. But ultimately, we have diplomats and negotiators who will be sitting down in Baghdad before the end of this month. They have the intelligence community assessment. Iran is not now engaged in critical work that would indicate that their nuclear program is a weapons program. And so there is a very real prospect that something can be accomplished here.
Right.
But yes, it's an election year, and that's a problem. But also, the Obama administration has said that they want to have a definitive idea of where these talks are headed by late June, early July. In other words, the Baghdad session and perhaps one or two others will give a clear indication of an interim agreement or a potential interim agreement long before the November elections. And everybody's going to make adjustments based on whether or not it looks like the president can campaign on the basis of a breakthrough deal or preparation for war.
Right.
There's no middle ground in the election year. It's a big complication.
Yeah, sorry for stopping you. I'd just like to get our concluding comments. Mr. Afrasiabi, the previous round of talks in Istanbul did not lead to a conclusive resolve. The West called for further talks, which have already begun. Some are saying or analyzing this situation as proving that the West has no option left vis-à-vis Iran but to negotiate. How do you see the position of the West vis-à-vis Iran? We know that it's gone ahead with sanctions. However, it's still back to the negotiating table. What's your idea about that?
Well, you know, we're at the earlier stages of confidence building, and the West has shown some signs of goodwill, and hopefully they will continue that in Baghdad. The mere fact that the IAEA has focused on, you know, some supposed military experimentation 12 years ago really shows that the West has nothing in its hand to accuse Iran with. And the IAEA and the Western governments are running out of excuses for avoiding to treat Iran's nuclear file as routine and normal. And hopefully the IAEA talks will bear fruit and will be a stepping stone for some concrete resolution of the Iran nuclear standoff in Baghdad and whatever follow-up meetings.
Right. Thank you very much. The last question to Mr. Bagherzadeh. If you could quickly answer, Mr. Bagherzadeh, do you think that the West has reached the conclusion that sanctions are not going to work anymore?
I think there are some indications. Of course, there are some pressure on the ordinary people, and they have reviews of those results in terms of the dollar being different rate in Iran. But at some point, because all the progress in nuclear activities is moving forward, so it's time to make some decisive measures and find a way out of this situation. So I think adding more sanctions definitely will cause the problem to be worse, and I think they have to find a really fundamental solution to all of this. The other most important point is the red lines, between red lines of the United States and red lines of Iran in terms of enrichment and not enriching. That has to be resolved. That is the most complicated issue of all the things, and hopefully there will be enough gap so we can find a solution. Otherwise, these two red lines are crossing each other, and there won't be any solutions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nader Bagherzadeh, Professor of the University of Irvine, joining us there live. Thank you very much. Also to Mr. Kaveh Afrasiabi in Boston. He's a political scientist and author of the book Iran's Nuclear Program, Debating Facts versus Fiction. And also joining us live from Washington with the Executive Intelligence Review, Mr. Jeff Steinberg. And thank you very much, you viewers, for staying with us. From me, Homa Lesgi, and the rest of the team, until our next program, it's goodbye.